Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the show where we stay laser focused on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating cash flow, long-term legacy wealth for you and your family, and ultimately trying to hit that financial freedom number. That's the bigger goal. And today on the show, we're going to talk about the best practices for managing real estate cash flow. It's one thing to have that goal to acquire properties and to sort of see, you know, to see that oasis in the desert where you're going to be trying to get to. But if you're not managing it properly, things can start to fall through the cracks, and you can pretty quickly let things go down the tubes before you know it. Am I right?
You are right. So if you've listened to this show, you know that we are not financial advisors. We are just a couple that invests in real estate and helps other people get motivated to get started building wealth in their family. And so part of the lessons of this podcast is learning the lessons that we are learning along the way. And so recently we've had some kind of management issues with our real estate. And by management, I mean
us.
Mine. Yeah, or my management.
Yes. So yesterday we literally had a meeting in the office where we were going over a number of properties. We had acquired a number of properties over the past few years.
And well, we had a big growth year last year. And so our rental portfolio kind of, I think it doubled actually. It did double in 1 year. Which was awesome because we had set our sights on things and we just executed really beautifully with some portfolio loans and various strategies we've talked to on this podcast. But then I had a hard time managing it all. And so, you know, I've talked many times about my files and how I have these systems and Dropbox and then hard files, and I keep our copies of leases and deeds and what have you. But I didn't have a system in place to know which property was expiring with its lease or its tax payments. And I'd been sort of relying on bills to come in. And this was something that's just not a good way to be on top of your bills and your management of your cash flow. And so I'm having to go back to the drawing board and rethink what I'm doing right now. And so I thought that maybe you could learn from these lessons, because we had two properties in specific. They both were the tenant vacated at the same time. These had been 5-year tenants. They were awesome tenants. So I hope that they've gone somewhere amazing.
Well, one of them died. So that person did go somewhere amazing.
I hope that they are having an amazing time.
And the so they're in a much better place.
But they didn't live there alone.
She was elderly, but she loved the property and she took great care of it. But then when she passed away, her family came in and had to, you know, clean out her belongings and that sort of thing. And
I thought her grandkids lived with her.
I'm
so aware.
Right. Wow. She's really on top of it. I hope you can pay heed to today's episode. And the tenants came the family who lived like many states away had to come in. This was a property in Michigan. I love Michigan. And we had, you know, just great tenants, great neighborhoods, and really high, you know, cash flow. And this, the family came in and cleaned it out. And there were some things. They accidentally took the washer and dryer. When they were moving everything out, they assumed that they belonged to her. And our property management team went in afterwards to do our tenant turnover, and they noticed that the washer and dryer were missing. The family apologized, and then we got money back as a result, but that didn't stop. We still had to order two new washers and dryers and, you know, then the paint touch up and that sort of stuff and carpet clean and get the cabinets cleaned out and everything else. But then, so then those were back up and running like about 3 weeks later. You know, that's usually what a tenant turnover, you know, in a good rental area should be pretty lickety split, you know? So, but I just the other day, Natalie comes to me. Now this was like November, and just yesterday she comes to me, and this is February, and she says, when are we going to get those two properties rented? And I said, wait a second, what are you talking about? They've been rented since November. It was a quick tenant turnover. What's going on here?
Right. So I sort of searched my email for my correspondence with the property management team. And I was like, oh, they did have lease ups. I have copies of the lease, but I haven't seen a payment. I haven't seen a statement. What's that about? And now, you know, I'm sorry, my baby monitor keeps beeping. Turn that off, because we're podcasting, baby monitor. I'm very busy. So I had not stayed on top of that in the months through the crazy holidays, and, you know, I'm maybe using the excuse that I've got a new baby and, things are crazy, but, you know, I didn't have systems in place to notify me that we hadn't gotten a payment from this property manager. And so I wrote to them and I'm like, what's going on here? I haven't seen a statement. Now, it turns out because of that washer and dryer thing, we bought new washer and dryer, but we had also done some renovations. So we were still in the red, meaning that the tenants had paid up. But the property manager that we were paying, we were using that money to pay the property manager back for the improvement. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. A few hundred dollars in improvements. And then, of course, we had the washer and dryer that, you know, they took care of. And we just said, yeah, slap it on our bill, basically, for our tenant turnover.
So we didn't have to put upfront cash. The property manager said, we'll front this money and you'll pay us back slowly with the rent, that we just don't give you that rent until you are out of the red.
Right. And if you're a rookie in this, that's typically how it's done. In our Pennsylvania properties, that's what's unfolded. You know, we had a little bit of a tenant turnover renovation. It cost us like $1,500 or something like that. And we just use the new rent from the new tenant to pay that back. That's typically how that'll go. So you're not having to come out of pocket on a tenant turnover. Many, many property management teams will do it that way, which is really great. So there are five things that we're going to talk about now on how to, you know, create best practices for managing real estate cash flow. And let's start with the first one. It seems simple, but it's so important. And if you don't manage your calendar effectively, you're in for a world of hurt. So set calendar notifications for insurance and tax payments.
Right, because there have been times in the past couple of years of owning properties that the bills didn't come in time, or we've moved and the bills were forwarded to an old address, even though I thought that I had updated the address in the, you know, online accounts for all of these insurance payments and tax payments. If I fail to do that, which, you know, maybe I forget when during a move, things get crazy, then you could be behind in these payments and you don't want to suffer the consequence. Now, it's enough to manage your own tax and insurance payments in your own personal life, but then to be doing it for so many dozens of properties, it's a lot. And so, you know, I keep track of these in my spreadsheets. We've talked about many times my cash flow spreadsheets for property by property. But then I have to go looking for that. And that's not a very good system, because if I've got 123 Main Street and 456 Main Street and 789 Main Street, I don't remember when those insurance premiums are up, even though, but if I think to myself, have I paid it, I can go in the spreadsheet and see that I have. But that doesn't mean, that just puts me behind the eight ball. Am I using that?
Right. Behind the eight ball is a good way. Yes. Okay. You because if you're in front of the cue ball, then you're in trouble too, because you get hit. But here, you know, here's a good app. If you're on an iPhone, I think just looking at our traffic for downloads for this podcast, most of our listeners are using iPhones. So there's a great app called Due, D-U-E. And what it's, you can customize it to set all kinds of custom alerts. So you can set an alert, say, every 3 weeks at noon, remind me to get a haircut. Or, you know, every Thursday at 7 a.m., remind me to take out the trash. Or you could set it quarterly. So remind me on April 1st to, send in the tax payment for this particular property in this particular state. You could set it up multiple times a year. And then those make sure you have turned on notifications on your iPhone. And you'll just get a backup, a notification about, and what's great about Due is it'll keep annoying you. It'll keep annoying you until it's done.
I don't think that's great.
It is good. It is, because, for instance, like taking out the trash, it'll remind you every 5 minutes until you hit completed. I'm done. Now I took it out. Done. And it feels so great when you get those things done. Or you can just set normal calendar reminders with the calendar software that you're using, whether it's Fantastical or your, you know, calendar on your computer.
And now in our family, we have a shared Gmail account, not for our personal emails, but for calendaring purposes. So it's like Morris family and some digits, so that we can both see what's going on in our family calendar. So when one kid has to go to a dentist appointment, or, you know, or we both have decided we're going to go out and see the show together, it goes in the joint calendar. So things like this can be something you put in both of your calendars so that both of you see. And so, you know, then someone's holding me accountable. Which I kind of don't like, but I kind of do. So then Clayton can say, oh, I see that the taxes were due on this property today. Did you pay them? And then, you know, if for some reason I've missed it, which is bad stuff, then I've got someone else helping me out. And also, you know, I have another tip here. Set calendar alerts for payments and statement days and lease up. So this is when you are supposed to receive your rent. These are for things that you should be getting from your property manager. Because if for some reason that falls through the cracks, and that does happen sometimes, maybe you've spammed them. For instance, our property manager just started to use this service called paylease.com. And
in Michigan, yeah.
And so the statements were spammed. I never got them. That's why I didn't understand why we were in the red for one and why we had seen a small payment on the other. I saw that on my bank statement, but I was like, what is this payment we just got? It was only for a few, like $300. And so I thought, oh, this must be for something. I thought it was a refund from an insurance company that I was expecting. So I was like, oh, I don't know this. That must be what this is. You should set alerts knowing that, you know, our property is in Indiana. We always get paid on the 21st.
20th through the 21st, something like
so
that.
So I know that's what that is. You might know another property manager always pays you on the 15th. Just make sure you have that communication and then your calendar alerts. And then you can look through your statement, which you should do every month, and say, okay, did I pay a plumber to fix something? You probably already knew that, but just see it itemized so that you're keeping track of that stuff. And then keep a calendar alert as well for your leases, because once you get a new tenant in, you have a new lease. Usually it's a year, 2 years, if you're lucky, like we were in Michigan, 5 years. Then put it on your calendar. This lease expires on this day. And so if your property manager just takes care of it and doesn't tell you, at least you have that information. You need to keep those leases because you're paying the insurance on it, and your insurance company needs to see the lease because they charge you differently if the property is vacant or rented.
And there's we have one property management team that sends out a paper check. And I actually kind of enjoy that because it's like, it reminds me, oh, we get, you know, rent in the mail. And I like to go to the mailbox and see a rent check come in. But that's just one of our property managers on one of our properties in a small little town in Pennsylvania. And it comes like clockwork at the beginning of every month, like the 5th of the month or something like that. Uh-huh. And other property managers, you know, send it out the 20th or the 15th. But you should set a reminder too for that paper check, you know, because right. if for some reason it gets lost in the mail or it gets returned or... You know, and to Natalie's point, there's a lot of times where, you know, property management teams will send out direct deposits, you know, ACH forms and things like, or ACH deposits. And sometimes the bank kicks it back. We've had that happen with Bank of America, where we've had big payments coming in for rent and it's just gotten sent back and returned. And we have to check with, you know, we'll check with the bank, like, why did that get returned? And they're like, we're not sure. The system must have been down that day. And then the property management office notices they got a returned check. So you want to stay on top of that because, you know, people don't like to just hand out money. So you need to be responsible for your own money when it's coming in.
Now, some of you are going to say, well, I have one property, so I'm not going to forget. Clearly, that's why I bought this one property. But you're creating systems so that you can inevitably grow, because that is your goal, is for us all to have bigger portfolios so that we can retire and sunbathe nude in our backyard, right?
Right. We don't want to be thinking about just like thinking as if you have one property. Think about having 30 properties because, right. you know, I'm sure with that one property, you're probably like standing by the mailbox when this thing comes in, or like if it's not there on the 20th of the month when that deposit's supposed to go out, you're annoying the property manager. Hey, it's the 20th. Where's my rent? You know, think about being the person with 30 properties where you're a little bit more in control. You just give there a few days, leeway so you can just double check on your numbers at the end of the month. Make sure you close out your books every month and look at your balance sheet so you know that, hey, this property did pay. I got everything that I should have gotten this year and everything is taken care of.
And like I said, these practices that I began when we had one or two properties worked, but they don't work quite as well now that we've grown so much. So that's why, you know, I wish that I had created these systems early. Another tip that I have is set a budget for your next purchase. So when that rent check comes in, say you get $600, $700, $800, make sure you know how much of that rent you're going to set aside to grow your portfolio. That's something that we've been working on this week.
I mean, frankly, you know, the three stages of real estate investing: buy, own, and cash flow. In the beginning, if your goal is to build a big portfolio, you should be using, I would think, almost all of that rent check to pay down. Focus your attention on getting those next properties. Pay them off because you're not worried about cash flow when you're a rookie, when you're starting out. Cash flow comes at the end. Acquisition and building your net worth is the thing you want to focus on. So I would put all of your guns focused on that one target, which is to get those next properties.
Now, we've talked many times about allocating your money and a certain percentage of every dollar into a profit account. So think about building up your coffers so that you can funnel that into the next acquisition. Now, obviously, that might not completely pay for, and if you're taking $200 a month, you're not going to get very far in getting a whole property soon, but at least you can leverage that, which we've talked about many times on this podcast. So make sure you have that in your budget. How little can you take out of your monthly rent every month in order to build your portfolio? Okay. So these last two tips, they're kind of two tips in one, because this is what I've been using my time on my computer for these last couple of days in order to catch up with everything that I realized had either fallen through the cracks or I didn't understand what was where. Because really, nothing had fallen through the cracks. It's just that I didn't have answers to this, and I had answers in all of these different places, and it was really bothering me. So what I did was created this master spreadsheet. I called it my sort of yearly due diligence, and I made columns for all of these things that I wanted to be able to track. For instance, I realized that in a couple of our purchases last year, I was never sent the executed deed from the
county.
From the county.
Right.
And I didn't realize that. I had like made a little label and slapped it on a folder and put it in my filing cabinet for when that deed showed up. And then I went and had a baby and didn't realize.
And, you know, you can contact the title company. The title company will contact the county. And a lot of times these counties are just, like, slow.
Title company had them. So, like, they had copies of them for me. And I was like, can you guys send me this? Sure, attached. Like, it was that easy. But the problem is that I didn't realize that I didn't have it yet. So I realized I needed a spreadsheet where it was all written out for me. So what I did was I put columns. So the first column is the address. The second column is what LLC that property is owned in, because that's also important. The second column, do I have the deed? The third, it's just a yes or no. Third column, do I have the current lease? It's just a yes or no. The fourth column, do I have the current property management agreement? Because you have a contract with your property manager that they're going to perform certain deeds and I'm going to pay them this much. And that is re-upped every year. So do I have that? Yes or no? So now I know what I need and what I can go out in search of. And then what do I have the current insurance payment? Yes or no? And then the date that that is paid on. And I can sort, again, in a spreadsheet, you can sort by the date, right? When is the tax payment due? Then I can sort by that as well. Do I have that current? Yes or no? So I can have all these things digitally. And I've talked many times about how I organize all of that stuff. But now I know what I need to track, what I need to put in my calendar, and where that needs to go. And I can share that with Clayton. And this is just something that you should do probably, I would say, twice a year. Go making sure that you have, once you have the deed, you're done. You never need that again. But the property manager, the contract with that person, the lease with your tenant, that stuff changes and you need to make sure that you've got it. Even if you've got calendar alerts, just go through once a year and say, do I have all this stuff? Because then I found myself sort of searching in different folders. You know, I think I'm pretty organized, but it was still tough to find, like, do I have that stuff? Wait, I never had a lease on that. That's so inconceivable.
It was kind of funny, actually, because, I mean, you're usually so on top of it. And so I was asking you some basic, like, sort of rudimentary questions yesterday about these different properties, you know, and you were like, sort of, like getting a little like nervous. It was weird to see her like this. She's like, well, I kind of have that in this one place, but I don't have it here. And she's like, you know, okay.
Systems don't work as well as I thought that they did.
But no, a good point. I mean, find a system that works for you. Like Natalie loves spreadsheets. She, you know, worked for her dad's company years ago and he forced her to learn Excel. And so she became like an Excel whiz. But I'm not a huge fan of spreadsheets. They kind of confuse me. And, you know, you might find that just using something like Apple Notes, which is actually really robust now, works on your Mac, it works on your iPad, it works on your phone. You can create folders and you can upload PDFs and you can make notes and you can track things in there. So you could share it. So that brings us to point number five, which is share it with your spouse or your partner or your loved one, whoever you're in business with on these properties, share it with that person so that and like Apple Notes, very, very simple to tap on the little plus sign and share it with somebody. And that way, anytime a change is made on your computer or, you know, his computer or her computer, it will show up on yours and you can add a copy of, you know, you need to replace a furnace. You just drag that receipt right into that folder and PDF, you know, drag it right in there, keeping track of it where you can share it, whatever system you come up with.
Mm-hmm. Because really, you can't rely on your memory for this kind of thing. I mean, if you have several dozen properties and, you know, you're asked, what's the monthly rent on, you know, 123 Main Street? I don't really know. I've got a ballpark, but I don't at all know the exact numbers until I go and look for it, because it's just impossible to keep all that in your head. And I never thought that that would be such a big challenge, because I thought, oh, maybe we'll, you know, retire and have two or three properties. And then once we went through our freedom cheat sheet and realized, okay, we need a pretty good size portfolio in order to retire on this, we've made it our mission to do all these acquisitions, which was great. But, you know, still, there's no one going to manage this for me. And I mean, we've got a CPA for our business. We've got property managers and all of that stuff. But that those systems are only as good as me keeping on top of that, because in the end, it's me that needs the profit from that in order to build and grow and also feed our children and all of that stuff. Like, we need access to that money, so I need to track it.
Well, and whatever, you know, the great saying, one of the great marketers of all time who said, you know, whatever you measure grows. You can't grow unless you're measuring it, and you have no idea then where you're going. You can't plan and come up with goals. So yesterday for us was all about goal setting and how many properties, more properties we wanted to acquire in the next, you know, 12 to 24 months. And if we want to acquire, you know, an additional 25 properties, and by how much money every month do we need to set aside from our rent and cash flow from our properties to target and acquire properties on a regular basis? Well, if you don't measure it and you don't know and you're not keeping track of it, you might as well just throw goals against the wall and watch them slip off down the wall like spaghetti. It's not going to work.
Right. I was listening to this podcast once of this woman who's, she's very like supernatural about money. I can't remember the name of it, but she believes a lot in like crystals and energy healing, and that's how you build wealth, which is very much aligned with my philosophy. I'm not making fun at all, because it really inspired me. She was talking about how these certain crystals had expanded her wealth horizon. But she did say, she's like, money is a living, breathing abstraction. Like, it basically is energy, because if the money that exists in this world, in like digital form, is not represented in paper form. Like, we only have in hard currency like less than a quarter of the money that we exchange in trade. So it really is like it's an abstraction in my spreadsheets. But she says money likes to go to people who count it. It likes to be counted. So you gotta be good with your beans.
It's like Scrooge McDuck. You know, he used to swim in his money.
So right.
That's why you got so much more of it. Well, there you go. The five tips on how to prioritize and
how to, we call this episode best practices for managing your cash.
Right. She always gives me these wordy titles. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Okay. Best practices for managing cash flow. Good stuff. So there you go. Go out there, get organized with your money. That's the only really way to track it and grow yourself and net worth.
Self-worth. Yes, indeed. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful day. Make it happen for you.
That's right. And if you are interested in working with our team at Morris Invest, it's simple. We do it all for you. You don't have to go out and find a property. You don't have to hire contractors. You don't have to do all of those things. If you like doing that, great. Then it's not a fit for you. But if you're busy and you want someone else to do all the work for you, then give us a call. Go to our website, morrisinvest.com, and click on you can watch the video. You can see a lot of our happy investors. You can learn more about our company and what we do. And you can click on the schedule a consultation button, and we'll jump on the phone with you for 30 minutes. We want to hear about your goals. We want to know what your financial freedom number looks like and what your goals are, how many properties you'd like to acquire, how you plan to get there, and we will help you get there. So that is our goal. We'd love to talk with you at morrisinvest.com. We'll be back with another episode again on Thursday, and we publish 3 times a week, folks, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We'll be back with another episode of Investing in Real Estate.